Well, welcome on into to QSO Live. And you like that there bumper music we're playing there? Little Bob Moore and the orchestra with a really old song called Mexico. Precursor to Herb Alpert. You know. Anyway, we're here. And sitting in tonight in the place of David, who has been vacuumed up by Trevecca tonight over a volleyball game or something like that, is Holly. She's left the room, but that's how she always does. As soon as you know, are trying to find her, she's left the room. So I can't really give her an introduction. but I do have with me tonight the fellow that is supposed to actually be hosting this show, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. See, I'm in Foreland, so I think Foreland, even though I have an 8 call. Hello, Don.
Good evening.
Oh gosh, you sound like Count Dracula.
Well, you know.
And also, folks, we have with us Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, and he is the kit expert of the world. And why I can say that is because we're a worldwide facility, and he's in charge of kits when it comes to our turf. So he is the worldwide kit expert. Hello, Joe. And I understand you're back from the Michigan thing.
That's right. Good evening, Ted, and good evening, Don. Don and I go back a long ways. In fact, we've been roommates off and on many years at Huntsville, and we go back a very long ways. I have lots of old pictures of Don. And yes,
I was the man I was back then.
That's absolutely true.
Is it true that those pictures that you've got of him, he's paid you quite a little bit of money to keep them secret?
That's right. I want those out. No, I want those out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
From Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, comes something revolutionary. It's the R-Finder K1DMR 4G LTE combination cell phone and DMR radio. That's right. All in one cell phone and a DMR radio, which will obviously operate analog as well, in one package. The cool thing about the DMR package is wherever you go, you turn the radio on and it just operates. You don't have to worry about a code plug anywhere you go in the world. And that's a fact. You should go up and check it out at rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net. This revolutionary combination cell phone and two-way radio with DMR. That's right. It's called the R-Finder K1 DMR 4G LTE cell phone. Go up and check it out at rfinder.net. Let me tell you a little bit about the ICOM IC7610. This is a high-performance RMDR receiver, transceiver. This thing will pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. And the 7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio, and it's going to change the world's definition. That's the ICOM 7610. Go to icomamerica.com/amateur. That's icomamerica.com/amateur.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I was at the Great Lakes HamCon, which was the first time that convention had been held. So that was it was a fun weekend, and got home to Omaha just before 11 at night and got back home to Lincoln at midnight. So it was a very long day on Sunday.
Was that the one that was held at the NASCAR track?
Yes, it was. And I have some incredible pictures of the place.
Very cool. I can't wait to see those.
See, I thought that was something that was further out into the future. I had people tell me, I have a friend of mine up there. He was talking all about it and everything. And he said that this was going to be a big shindig. But I thought it was further out in the future. I didn't think it was up so close.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting. I was told about it over a year ago that it was in the works, and then offered a chance to come and speak. And So I took advantage of it, and we'll go into more detail as to how everything works when you have a ham fest at a racetrack.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I originally am from Michigan, of course, and so I'm familiar with the Michigan International Speedway. It's in the what they call the Irish Hills, and there used to be a as a kid, they used to take us to the lake there. There was a Wampler's Lake. That was the name of it. And I just remember getting many sunburns in the summertime there. So that, I don't know. Were you there at the Irish Hills? Did you see that the Irish Hills is two towers or something? The observation decks that you can go up on. And maybe you didn't see that. I don't know.
I didn't see that, but I did see signs that said I was driving through the Irish Hills.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know how many Irish people there are still there. You know, but it's a community that's been. Been around a long time, and the Michigan International Speedway, of course, was a milestone thing when they put that in. So,
hey, why is that? Why is Wampler a familiar name to me? For some reason, I associate Wampler with Dayton.
That's right, because the ball arena was called Wampler's Ball Arena.
That's right. Okay.
And there's also a sausage.
And it was the Wampler family that ran it.
That's what it is. That's the connection. Okay.
So anyhow, I want to say that, and incidentally, Don, not to discuss technical things over the air, but now that I've put you on and I'm listening over the headphones, yes, you have that bottom end is really predominant, and actually it's not objectionable. It sounds good. It really sounds good.
Well, we've been a little inside baseball for the listeners. Ted gave me a DBX 286 mic preamp and processor, and I put it in last night, and I'm still tweaking it. Actually, I knocked some of the I had the highs up considerably on the board, on the EQ on the little Behringer mixer board, and I knocked that down a little bit, so that might have enhanced the lows.
It just sounds good. Well, anyhow, good. You guys Thank go you. Back and you've roomed together. Joe has pictures of Don, and Don says he wants them out, but I have a feeling that really and truly he probably doesn't.
My QSL card, the AE5DW Pile PR40 tattoo, Joe took that picture. So yeah, Joe took the picture on my QSL card.
Well, you know, this fella here has kept the kit building interest at an all time high, because he gets all excited about these things, and it's cool because. You know, now, I mean, I think back about what I had to go through as a kid collecting old television chassis. I would go to two or three TV repairmen and, scrounge what they had in the back of the store, what they had thrown out, take those things home and clip all the parts out and everything, you know. And the parts were so plentiful then, you could build almost anything out of anything. You get television plate. I call them a plate transformer. We have television B plus transformers and filament transformers and things, and you could collect all these things. It was pretty easy to build things out of tubes and whatnot. But the times they have changed, and now we have, you know, Radio Shack stores closed all over the place. You can order things on the internet, but that sometimes is tedious. You're sitting there trying to order one part and another part, and who did I get this from and all that. But Joe has consolidated all this, and he's got all these kits that he's tested out. And if you're a newbie and you really want into kit building, this is the guy to listen to. So Don, I'm going to let you lead Joe through this, because I think this is you guys go back a ways, so you're going to talk the same language, you know. And I'm just going to sit here and make weird faces, okay?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, Joe and I met. Probably I started going to Dayton in '99. When was it, Joe, that that Bill Pasternak did the time capsule? I think that's when you and I met. Was during at the Newsline town hall meeting where we buried the time capsule. I think that's where you and I met.
Yeah, and then, I have pictures of the time capsule.
Yeah, and does anyone know where that is now that Hera's gone? I mean, wasn't it buried around Hera somewhere?
No, it actually is in a closet in some ham's house there in Dayton, last I heard.
Oh, okay.
And it's supposed to be brought out when, 2023 or something like that, so we'll have to,
maybe
have to look at the
like
picture
that.
Because it says on it when it's supposed to be opened.
it was like 25 years, I think, after it was sealed, I think. Yeah. And I know that one of the, I think the, some of the original like digital camera cards, I think that you shot, a couple of those are in there. And I don't even remember what format those are now.
It's a CF type card.
That's so, right. Yeah.
That, so I'm going to hang on to a reader that plugs into USB.
Compact flash. Cause it's amazing how that stuff was cutting edge, you know, 20 some odd years ago. And now it's, you know, it's hard to even find those things, but, a little bit of background about Joe. Joe has been into kits forever. And if you read CQ magazine, Joe Eisenberg is the kit building editor of CQ magazine. And Joe actually got that gig while riding in my car
in the Huntsville.
In the Huntsville Ham Fest. It was, who was the young ham of the year? I think it was,
he was from Texas.
Yeah. I'm blanking
out. Andrew.
Andrew Koenig. I can't remember his call off top. KE5 GDB, I believe, is his call. Mm-hmm. And so you and me and Rich Moseson, W2VU from CQ, are driving over to the restaurant, which happened to be Five Guys, because that's where Andrew wanted to eat. It's all about the kid, and the kid wanted to eat at Five Guys, and that's where we went. And so you can fill in the story for the details, but basically, Rich asked Joe, have you ever thought about maybe, we're thinking about maybe doing a kit column, and have you ever thought about that? And go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Yeah, but before you do, though, Holly entered the room again. As I told you, she vacated the premises. I couldn't really. So I want you to say hello to Joe and to Don, so that KG4WXV, go ahead.
And hello, Joe. Hello, Don.
There hello, you, baby.
Okay. Oh, hi, Holly.
There you go. Okay, now, Joe, proceed with your story. I just, because see what would happen if I didn't introduce her. She'd say, well, you just made me sit there. And, but go ahead.
Exactly.
So I'm sitting in the front next to Don, and Rich
on,
in the back.
On his side, not the middle this time. It was on his side. Yeah. Not like we were spooning or anything.
Yeah. And time. Rich is behind, and he said, have you considered, you know, I like your photography and so forth and your presentations. Have you ever considered writing for us? Maybe at least a couple sample articles, and maybe we can turn that into a monthly column. And I said, well, as I hesitated for like a second, Don says, go for it, Joe. And so, and with a couple expletives added to that, and I said, yes, I will. And then when we sat down to eat, I worked out the details of what format he wanted me to send the information. And he wanted two sample columns along with photos. And so after Huntsville, I went home. As soon as I flew home, I sat down and produced two full columns with photos. And I waited and I waited about a week and a half. And then I get an email back from Rich, and he says, okay, that's November and December 2009 issues. Keep going. And I haven't quit yet. So
obviously you're doing something right. Well, they're fascinating articles. So and very, very well written.
Well, what happened was that they had these reader service cards in the magazine that had check your favorite interests in ham radio, and kit building was not one of them.
Right.
Let alone home brewing and things like that. And so many people after the column appeared started handwriting that in that they had to change the cards. And so I'm really ever grateful to all my readers out there who have made the column a success, because I don't make it a success. It's people who read it and enjoy it that make it a success.
Right. They allow you to keep doing it and have the, what am I trying to say here? Never mind. Whatever I'm trying to say, give you the popularity to keep doing that. That's what I'm trying to say, whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's made it worthwhile. I know there are some advertisers from time to time who ask to be adjacent to the column and so forth. And sometimes kit suppliers and tool suppliers and so forth that have been featured in the article have advertised also, which is good for the magazine and good for kit building.
Right.
Because I try to not only show kits, but I try to show tools that make kit building a lot easier and that are very helpful and help you succeed. Because a first-time kit builder, if they even are trying to put together something as simple as a code practice oscillator and they don't get it to work, they're never going to try it again. But if I can give them enough hints and enough help that they can be successful on their first try, guess what they're going to do? They're going to buy another kit.
Right.
And so the kit makers are going to respond by saying, oh, there's more demand for this stuff. And so they'll start designing and marketing more kits, which makes it a lot more fun for us kit builders.
And part of Joe's claim to fame to put a voice to the face, for those of you who have been to the Dayton Hamvention, Joe is one of the more photographed attendees of the Dayton Hamvention because he is the guy in the Cat in the Hat hat. So, and he only wears it at Dayton. You've had a lot of requests to wear that at other conventions, but you only wear it at Dayton. And Joe also does the wildly popular and very comprehensive kit building forum at Dayton. And you you do that at other Hamfests as well by request, don't you?
Yes, I do. In fact, I just did this last weekend in Michigan and had a packed room. This was my first time ever speaking in Michigan, and so I had a lot of first-time attendees. And it was great giving them hints and tips on how to build kits, how to sort out your parts, what to do, how to mount your parts on the circuit board, what a solder connection should really look like, how do you correct it if there's a problem, things like that. I go over all that in my seminar, and I propose to them for next year to maybe do a live kit build like I did a couple weeks ago in Peoria, Illinois, where we build a kit.
That'd be awesome.
And we have some hands-on kit building.
That's incredible. I would love to sit around and be part of that. I went to a mini maker fair. Tyler and I, N7TMW now, went earlier in the year, and they had a children's area or a youth area where they were actually showing kids how to solder. And I got to the two people who were in there were busy with other kids, so I just sat down and helped this young kid, probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 maybe. Start to learn how to solder. And Tyler even got involved in it because he had, when I bought him his audio mixer for his voiceover stuff that he's doing, I had him solder the XLR connectors onto the audio cables. I said, here, you're going to learn how to solder. You're going to have a little bit of sweat equity into this stuff. So he was actually, had only really done it once, but he was picking up things, and he was actually, the next kid that came along, Tyler was helping him solder. So it's infectious. Getting the youth involved in this. And of course, you know, that's what's going to let this great hobby of ours and service and fraternity continue, is getting the youth involved. And there's no better way than doing like a kit building forum and getting the youth involved. And you do that as well. I believe you get kids involved in building something fairly simple. Like you said, a code oscillator or just some sort of LED matrix that flashes or something. It's very easy to get kids involved in this. And once, like you said, once you build something that works, you're going to want to build something else and something else and something else. And it's like potato chips. You can't stop.
Yeah. In fact, let me use this opportunity to talk about a kit that I'm going to feature in my December column. And this comes from www.qrpguys.com. QRPguys.com. And this particular kit is a KD1JV creation, and he has created a lot of kits. Some of the kits that are at QRPKits.com, I think a couple of the 4-state QRP kits in the past have been designed by him. And it is a code practice oscillator. Now you say, okay, there's a lot of code practice oscillators out there, but none quite like this. This one has an 8-pin IC on it, and a couple of buttons and so forth. It doesn't have a speaker or beeper. You plug in a headset on it. But the neat thing is that if you plug in a straight key, when you turn it on, it sends S back. And I say, how does it do that? Well, it's a very smart code practice oscillator. In fact, it has a mode that you can use it to send you random 5-character groups. And you can change the speed, whatever you'd like it to send, so you can use it to practice receiving code. And the interesting thing about this kit is that the instructions to use it are printed on both sides of this circuit board. So you can look on the back, and it tells you how to wire the plugs. and what plugs into what and what the different modes are and how to hold down the button and so forth to make it do different things. So it's an actual pretty smart code practice oscillator. It's powered by a single CR2032 battery. And this 2032 battery is the same battery that you get in your remote controls, like for your car and so forth.
One of the more common button batteries that you'll find anywhere.
Yeah. And so the kit itself, believe it or not, only sells for $15.
Really?
Very inexpensive. Very easy to build because I think all five of the capacitors are the same. So doesn't matter where you put them, as long as you put them in a capacitor location.
Right.
Three push buttons, a switch, two jacks, a battery holder, and a pot, and the IC. And so even a beginning kit builder in about an hour can have a working code practice oscillator that's very smart. It's actually a keyer in that you can use a paddle, but it will not key a radio. But it will do CW with a paddle, and you can adjust the speed on this. So if you're trying to teach a group code, obviously there's a disadvantage on this one in that it doesn't have a beeper or a speaker. The advantage of that is that it puts out audio at a level that is adjustable, and you can feed it into one of those little Bluetooth speakers that has a line-in jack, just a little standard three-conductor cord. You just plug that in, and one of those little Bluetooth speakers would fill the whole room with CW. Right. So it's a cute kit. It is called the KD1JV Code Trainer, and you get that at QRPGuys.com, and it's only $15. Pretty amazing little kit, and I featured it in December because that time of year, it's a great time to pick out a kit that would make a good gift,
right?
A great way to start your kids or grandkids into kit building.
Even a stocking stuffer for a ham, maybe who's been a ham for a while and maybe wanting to either brush up on his code or finally get around to learning the code.
That's right. In fact, there's a lot of guys learning code now. Everybody thought that when they got rid of the code tests, nobody would want to learn the code anymore. And actually, it's been the opposite.
Yes, the opposite. That's right.
They're, the K7QO, I think it is, CDs are very popular. You also have people even using the old Amico records and tapes and so forth and CDs. And kits like this really help out a lot because it transmits code to you very crisp and clear, and you can adjust the speed.
I'm going
to
say,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ted.
I was going to say, one of the things that's a real incentive, too, is all these little bitty tiny CW transmitters. Some of the stuff are even transceivers that do CW and receive. I know you've talked about them before, Joe, but I think that's, you know, that's a big, you know, you got to learn the code to put one of those on the air, you know, so
exactly
it becomes an end result of that, I think. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Don. I didn't mean to interrupt, but just a passing thought.
Yeah. And the good thing about that kit, too, just thinking about it, being that it has no onboard speaker, you got to listen to it in headphones. You can sit around and maybe if you ride the bus to work or you're on an airplane or you're in your office at lunch or whatever, you can practice your code and not disturb anybody else around you, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, you can plug in any standard earbuds like you would use with any music player, and it works just fine.
I've got a question now. In the building of this, I would imagine that, I mean, it sounds like a fairly simple kit. I would imagine that the IC is socketed, so you don't have to worry about burning that up with the soldering iron, huh?
Yes, it is. It's an 8-pin IC, so it's a very small socket, and it is, like I said, it is socketed. It comes with the socket. The only thing it doesn't come with is the battery, and I think it's because of the restrictions on air
mailing it, probably,
with the lithium-ion battery that's loose.
But you can get that at any drugstore or...
Yeah.
It's convenience to Walmart, any place. So,
and old motherboards.
Right. Yeah. And old motherboards. Exactly. That's.
I mean, like Ted was talking about taking parts out of old TVs. Where you can always take the 2032s out of old motherboards.
Right. Right. So, what else is hot as far as kit building?
Oh, there are just tons of neat kits coming out. The four-state QRP group is probably the biggest source of new kits. And David Kripe, NM0S, is a Collins engineer, Rockwell Collins engineer, and he has designed all sorts of neat things. One of his later ones is called the Buzzkill. And this is a small board. I wouldn't call it a beginner's kit because it's got a lot of parts on that little board, but it's nothing really difficult. There's no toroids to wind or anything like that. But what it does is it gets rid of AC buzz, AC noise, 60 Hertz. And it does this very precisely by using two different crystals in it to synthesize what it does. Now you say, okay, you can get rid of the 60 Hertz buzz, but what about the harmonics? Because as you know, when you're listening to HF and you got a noisy power line or something, the noise isn't just at 60 Hertz, it's at the harmonics. And this thing takes out precisely those harmonics.
Wow.
It takes out 60 Hertz, 120 Hertz, 180 Hertz, and so forth, 240, and so forth. It just slices those out. And this is not a pure DSP, but it does have a delay in it slightly as it handles it. And it is very precise. It does not really impinge greatly at all on the bandwidth that's outside of those frequencies. So when you have a noise source, like a motor or a street light or something that's causing you grief, and you put this device in the line, it gets rid of both the fundamental 60 Hertz buzz, but the 120 and so forth. Very, very effective and works great.
I got an email coming in here from Sacramento, California, and the guy's name is Jerry. He says he's a member of a antique radio club. I guess they you know, collect these things. And he said he's looked around for a kit that would allow him to make a transmitter to put music on these old radios that he's restoring. And he was asking about a kit that, and I don't know what it is, something from MFJ, which is an AM broadcaster, AM transmitter for broadcast band. But what he did mention is he said that he's gone on eBay and he finds these transmitters are all $250. He's looking for something within reason that he can build. I don't know. I thought it was funny. He's looking to you, Joe, for advice.
The Vectronics kit that's put out by MFJ, I'm told, works quite well. I have not built one myself. There was another one. There's a test oscillator. If you look at midnightscience.com, I know he used to have one. He used to be a design engineer for Cantronics. And old Uncle Phil makes a lot of crystal sets and so forth. And he had a test oscillator, and I think there was a way to modulate that. That was the other thing that I knew of. But yes, the Vectronics kit should work okay. I don't think it's synthesized. I think you can just tune it to wherever you want. And of course, those old radios don't have synthesized tuners, so it doesn't really matter except to make sure you're zero beat so you don't have a beat note.
I happen to have the MFJ 2017 catalog in my hand, and it's right on the very back page. It's actually the inside of the back cover. AM radio transmitter kit lets you set up your own AM station and broadcast crystal clear programming from your studio with you as the disc jockey. And who doesn't want to be a disc jockey? Choose a clear frequency from 530 to 1750 kilohertz. Standard line level or microphone input. Easy connection. Audio level adjustment. Gives the dimensions. It's quite small. Simple skill level. It's VEC 1290K.
So in other words, you tune that radio in and just take the transmitter and swish by back forth until you get it centered, you know.
And it's only $30. It's $29.95 VEC 1290K from MFJ Enterprises.
Oh, there you go, Jerry. Because he was saying he was looking on eBay, seeing him for $230. Wow. I mean, if you're wanting to
$30, build your own and you got it.
Yeah, you just transmit that music into your. And I could just see a whole house full of these old radios. Matter of fact, I remember at Ronnie Millsap's one time, he had all these radios. They were beautiful, and had these chrome looking. capacitors and stuff. I'd never seen anything like that. He opened the lids on these things, and they had, they were decked out with chrome, but he had something like that going, because he had them all turned on at the same time all over the house, and the music just went everywhere. But that would be cool. But that was just a listener asking. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I thought that was worth asking.
That'd be great, yep. Though. Do one of those, get you a whole bunch of old tube type radios, and feed that little transmitter with, I don't know, some Benny Goodman or something like that, some old, vintage big band stuff from back when those radios were brand new. And that would be just awesome as it could be, I think.
Yeah, there's a guy in Texas, and I'm trying to remember his name, who sells crystal sets and one tube regen AM broadcast receiver kits that are on wooden blocks. And his name is escaping me right now, but he uses, I think, one of those to demonstrate these and to demonstrate crystal sets.
Very cool. Well, what is the latest and greatest, or what do we see coming down the pipe? I guess what's coming up as far as kit building? What's the next big thing as far as you can tell or predict?
Well, in terms of trends, I think you're going to see a lot more of these simple kits. Like QRP Guys has a 40 meter receiver that has a digital display that's under $50.
Really?
And I found that pretty amazing. I have not built that kit yet, but that's kind of next on my list. There are a lot of kits to help you fix kits. Now, you have to say, That doesn't make sense, but it does. You have to realize, what was the biggest kit maker of all time?
Heath Kit. Yeah.
Okay. So how many SB200s have you ever seen at a flea market? And I was fortunate enough to spend $100 and buy one at a Nebraska flea market that was in pristine shape. I mean, it was beautiful. The meter wasn't scratched. There was no smoke marks on it or anything. The paint didn't have a scratch. It looked beautiful. And so I put it on the bench and I plugged it into the wall and it lights up, and the high voltage meter says there's 2,350 volts present, which is pretty nominal for those. And I thought, well, this is cool. And then I see a wisp of black smoke come out of the thing. And I thought, that's interesting.
Never good. It's never good.
But the power supply isn't fluctuating. So I thought, okay, let me look this up. And what that is that after a while, the power supply goes out and it's a load resistor that actually gets overheated because there's too much ripple and so forth. So there's a company called Harbach Electronics, and they are in, I think it's Polk, Ohio. And it's run by W8CQ, who's taken it over. And he makes power supply kits, not only for the Heathkit amplifiers, but for many of the older amplifiers like Drake L4Bs and things like that from that era, the 60s and 70s. And so he sells a line of kits that you can use to rehab these things. And the suggestion that was given me is, even though the tubes are probably okay, it's probably a good idea to replace the tubes with new ones so you don't have any hidden issues. And so I have a new set of tubes I got from DX Engineering. And then I'm getting three of his kits that are being sent to me this week. One of them is the power supply. Now, what it does is it physically fits in the same spot, and it replaces the power supply with a much improved, higher quality power supply. And he tells you which color wire from the original kit goes to which terminal on the circuit board and so forth. And so it basically replaces the power supply. Then there's another kit that's an add-on, and he shows how to mount it in the chassis and so forth. It's called an inrush kit. And what that does is it eases the problem that it's caused when you first turn on a high power amplifier. And that is, all that current rushing in all at once can be harmful to the capacitors, the filaments, and so forth. And what it does is it allows a gradual step up of the line voltage as it comes in.
It's an automatic variac. Yeah,
exactly. And then it's got relays in it. Right. And after so many seconds, then it allows full power to be applied to the circuit. The third kit, which is a real must because I'm going to be plugging this into my ICOM 7600, is a change to the relay control voltage. The relay voltage is about 120 volts or 109 volts, something like that, DC, on the old Heath kit, because back then everything had mechanical relays.
Right.
And nowadays a lot of these radios are solid state switched. So what it does is it changes the voltage from being 100 and some volts down to a very low current and low voltage around 1.5 volts. So I could plug that into the amplifier relay output of the radio, and it's not going to have a problem.
I was going to say, Joe, you mentioned Harbach transformers, and just as a note, those fellows, I believe, are the ones that took over after Peter Dahl. So if you have a Peter Dahl transformer somewhere, they were the folks, I think, that took over after Peter Dahl.
No, that's somebody else in Indiana, I think, that took those over. But Harbach makes the power supply kits and the restoration kits for the Heath amps, as well as a lot of the other common amplifiers that you'll find in the flea markets today. I don't think I've been to a flea market where I didn't see an SB220 or an SB200. And somebody told me, well, you know, the SB200 only puts out a kilowatt peak on it, but if you drive it lower, you know, you get 400 or 500 watts out of it, and it'll be loafing for forever. And when you think about it, if I'm putting out 100 watts and I take it up to about 500 or 600 watts, the difference between that and 1500 watts is probably about half an S unit. So it's going to get me over the pileups like the Beauvais D-Expedition and so forth. It's going to get me over that, and it's not going to dim the lights, and you can plug it into a regular wall socket instead of having to run 220 to it. But the main thing is about the SB200 is it's an extremely reliable amplifier, and it was a kit. And so here are kits that you build and install to improve a kit. And I think that's the neatest thing in the world. And that's what I'm writing about.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So how long have you been doing the CQ column now?
Okay. The first one would have been November 2009.
That's right.
So I am now into my ninth year of doing the column. I've completed 8 full years, and I'm now into my ninth year already. Wow. Of writing for CQ. And in addition, I also write for the ARL handbook. I've been updating the construction techniques chapter in the ARL handbook since the 2014 edition. So 2018 is a pretty big rewrite. And so you'll see a lot of my updates in that as well.
Very, very cool. What is your favorite thing to build? That's what I want to know.
My favorite thing to build. You know, if I could say it, it's something that works.
Well,
that's my favorite thing to build. But in reality, transmitters and receivers are probably my favorite. I like some of the accessories. If I was to say one of the more unusual things I've built, I wrote about it, I think, in September or October edition of CQ. And that is a kit that's, you can get it through Adafruit, and I can't remember who else. It's called a TV Be Gone. And what it does is it transmits with very high power infrared LEDs the on-off codes for about every make and model of television. And so you could go into a sports bar or something, and then the whole wall winks out.
Oh, that's funny.
Or the Nebraska Furniture Mart or something like that.
That's hilarious.
But I tell people don't really do that because if you would hold that up to your cell phone, you would notice that it's a lot brighter. You know, if you use a cell phone camera, iPhones don't do this as well as the Androids. But when you hold a TV remote control up, you'll see a faint purple flashing light that comes out of a TV remote when it's pointed at a camera. And this thing here can turn off TV sets over 100 feet away. and it has two different wavelength LEDs on it, and it's amplified. They have amplifier transistors driving these darn things, and it's blinding to my phone. I just see this bright purple flash that pretty much blinds my cell phone camera when I push that button. So you could pretty well bet that somebody's surveillance camera is going to see that bright flash coming out of your hand.
Oh, absolutely.
I got a, so, I got a little note here that I, you know, I was sitting here thinking to myself, if I lost my mind. Of course, I did that quite some time ago. But I remember, you know, we, for commercial broadcast, we've ordered transformers. So I know that we have recently ordered, you know, some pretty hefty transformers from Harbach, which we used to, all these transformers that were in these transmitters were Peter Dahl. Okay, so, but I did notice on QRZ there's a post that says, "It is with great sadness and I regret that I must inform you all, as of February 14th of 2013, Harbach Electronics, LLC, will discontinue the Peter Dahl line of transformers." So this must be, or this must apply to the amateur line of Peter Dahl's that they were at one point evidently handling, but no longer are doing that. So anyways, I saw that. I thought, I know I'm not crazy. I know I'm a little crazy, but not totally crazy.
I think it was somebody in Indiana that took over the transformer line. And then, his name is Weinberg,
but I know for the large transformers that we have in these commercial rigs, we were still getting those. Originally, those were Dahl transformers. We're getting those from Harbach. So I think Harbach makes all kinds of things, but probably, I'm just going to guess, that it's difficult, you know, in our current economy to stay, you know, current with small transformer orders, if that makes any sense. I don't know. Maybe.
There's somebody else who took over those transformers, which are common to like the Heathkit amp and so forth. There is a source for those that took that over. But the Harbach power supply kits and so forth are done by Mr. Weinberg. I think it's KHCQ in Ohio.
Now that I don't know, because I haven't ordered only transformers I've ordered have been huge, big ones, you know. So for, you know, 25 kilowatt FM rigs and stuff like that. So, but anyway, I thought to myself, evidently at that point in time, they were handling the Peter Dahl stuff. It'd be good to find out who the fella is exactly to refer on the radio, because I know a lot of guys that have equipment that dies and then they say, well, I need to get a transformer, you know, and where do you find something like that in today's world? But Joe would know here. Joe Eisenberg would know. You call Joe, he'll tell you where to get him.
Joe knows
everything.
I try.
But, you've got me wanting to look for an SB200 now.
Yeah, and what's interesting about those amplifiers, like I said, is that you can pretty much run them plugged into a regular wall socket and not have to worry about wiring 220 into the shack.
Yeah.
And it's so reliable, and there's so many parts available. I think that the new Heathkit guys somebody told me they sell the switch wafers and stuff for those, and that they won't die. You have to realize that there's so many of those out there, and so many people have relied on them for years. Amplifiers don't get old, as far as I'm concerned. That they do their job, and yeah. if you can find the parts and so on, and these newer improvement kits that restore them, you can make them even better than the original. These new power supplies have even lower ripple than the original design. They use obviously higher quality solid state diodes than they had in the 1960s.
Right.
So when you're talking about 50 years, better capacitors and boards and resistors and so forth, you can't go wrong.
You know, I went to the Bowling Green Ham Fest, Joe, see if you remember this. But I saw sitting there on the table, very, very lonely. Matter of fact, I think the thing was crying. Because I could see tears coming out of the meter, you know. Was a Heathkit HA-10. And so I bought it. I built two of those when I was younger. Are you familiar?
That's that was the novice transmitter, wasn't it?
No, this is an amplifier. The four 811s and a pair of 866 Mercury vapor rectifiers.
Oh, okay. Yes. I remember now.
Yeah, it had to come home with me. There was no way I could say no, you know. But what had happened is somebody had taken this thing apart, and I don't know what all they've done to it. I'm going to have to undo it all, but they've got an automatic switch, relay switching from RF, and they, I think, eliminated all the regular bands except for 11 meters, so you can plug your CB radio into it and key it, and it'll key up. I can't imagine why someone would want to do that with 811s, but nonetheless. So I want to put it back to the way it's supposed to be, because the HA10 was such a cool amplifier. It's just four 811s, but it was just enough to get you out of the noise. But the only problem was you needed a forklift to transport it anywhere. I thought you would remember the HA10 kit, but it's...
Yeah, it kind of predated when I got into amateur radio. But the other nice thing about the 200 is you can lift it up and put it on your desk, and you don't have an external power supply. Of course, the heaviest part of that amp is the transformer. The tubes are 572Bs. And I chose to get them from DX Engineering because theirs are manufactured to such a high spec that you don't have to get a matched pair because they're all so close in tolerance. And I looked at them, and it's amazing the quality inside these tubes. Absolutely wonderful construction compared to the originals.
There's a lot of guys pull 811s out of amps and stick 572Bs, and that used to go on all the time. And one thing that's nice, it doesn't really give you any more power, so to speak, but what it does do is it gives you a little bit more leniency on mistuning. So that's what it does.
Yeah, the plates are pretty thick on those. I was kind of amazed when I looked at that. Oh, nice thick plates on these things. The original tubes in the amplifier do light up, and they light up nice and bright. So that's why I knew there was no trouble with the transformer or the filament circuit.
You know that, but Don, that if you're in the mood to get one of those amplifiers, that's one thing, and they're hernia proof. They're not like the SB220 or a lot of these other amps. You can actually lift them up off the floor and put them on your desk without any.
There was a 220 at this Hamfest, and I was looking at it, and it is a lot heavier than the 200.
Yeah, and I don't know how much do you gain. I mean, I've got a couple of Drake L4Bs, okay, and matter of fact, I gave one to Matt, I think it was for a Christmas present. But the thing of it is everybody complained about those, and they said, well, the voltage is too low. And I don't know what the L4B puts out. It's over 1,000 watts, might be 1,200, I don't know. But they were talking about, well, you need heftier, you need more voltage, you need 3,000-4,000 volts on the 3-500s. But I don't see that it gains anything. The stock L4B, if you rebuild the power supply in that thing, you know, it's going to, I say rebuild it because as they get older, the caps dry out and whatnot. But a stock L4B, for goodness sakes, you'll never, never ruin a set of tubes. Those tubes are there for life as long as you don't push it. And that was one thing I really liked about that amp is it was very conservatively built and well-designed that way. I think pushing them. Now, the SB220 runs hotter, runs higher voltage. I'm not sure as to what the 200 runs, but I know I built a couple of SB220s. And that's a hefty voltage on there. It's more than the L4B. I think the L4B is around, 2,000, 2,200 volts, and the SB220 is 3,000 volts or something like that. Somebody needs to know more about this than me.
Yeah, they do have boards for the L4B. And so you can do the same kind of things to the L4B as I'll be doing to the SB200. They also have it for the Swan Mark II and the 117C power supply. They have rebuild kits for the Yaesu 2100 amplifier, if you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
So they have all sorts of these rebuild kits for all the different types of amplifiers. And I, you know, when I saw that, I thought, well, this has got to be the way to go. And a lot of people say, well, don't you just write about QRP? And I say, well, no, because I write about kits, and kits can be high power and low power. And so the QRP people hopefully will forgive me as I journey through the rebuild of this amplifier.
Well, I don't know. I think everything's got its place. I think sometimes, you know, QRP is challenging and it's a lot of fun, but there's times when you're on and there's thunderstorms blowing around and you're just wanting to talk and shoot the breeze, you know, and the noise just, you know, it gets on your nerves, you know, so everybody raises the power level up a little bit, the noise goes away and you enjoy your evening. But I don't think it's, I mean, it's not.
And by the way, probably misspoke when I called it an inrush kit. They call it a soft start, but it's the same thing. The soft start is the inrush protection. And that's actually pretty important because when you first turn one of those on, the filaments are a huge draw, let alone the, you know, starting up the high voltage and energizing the fan and the relays and so forth. So the soft start really, really helps it lengthen the lifetime of all these components.
That's amazing. I don't know, has anybody worked around a Henry broadcast transmitter?
Not me.
No, I've never been around one of those.
Yeah, well, I've seen two or three of them, and you, I mean, these things are amazing. You go in and you flip the on switch, it brings the filament and the high voltage up instantly at the same time. You turn the switch on and it's bam. it's scary. It really is scary to work on them. I know there's somebody out there listening right now that has had to work on a Henry. They work. I mean, they work, but I've just never seen anything like they bring up filament and high voltage at the same time. Just crazy. No contactor or anything going like that to step start or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at his list of different amplifiers, and he has them for Collins, Amp Supply, Dentron, Drake, Heathkit, Kenwood, Swan, Yaesu. It's got all sorts of different brands of radios, and it is primarily your stuff from the 60s and 70s that this is aimed at. But like I said, you're now with modern capacitors, modern diodes, and so forth, and it's going to be a great asset to your restoration project.
It's kind of like a hot rod in your old 63 Rambler. It still looks like a 63 Rambler, but you got an LS1 engine under the hood.
That's
kind of
right.
Cool. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of my latest project, and I'm always after new kits. When people come out with new kits, sometimes one will show up in the mailbox, sometimes I'll find them and just kind of order one and see what it's like and so forth. The 4-State QRP group, have to tell you, makes some of the neatest kits, and they are at 4sqrp.com. And the 4-State QRP group doesn't make a profit on these at all. They are strictly for fundraisers to put on the annual OzarkCon, which is the QRP conference that's held in Branson, Missouri. So if you want to go to the country music capital of the world, that's the place to go. And there are a lot of kits that are absolutely incredible for the money. They have a thing like the 4S tuner, which is a QRP antenna tuner that works from 80 to 10 meters, and it's got two LEDs on it that tell you when it's tuned correctly. They make bandpass filters. There are other kits like the Hypermite, and they have a code practice oscillator as well, Akir. There was one that was on the front page of QST about a year and a half ago called the ZZRX40, which is a 40-meter receiver. They make the Ozark Patrol. Now, what that is, we're all from the era where back in the 60s, you had those three-transistor, all-band regenerative receivers, the Globe Patrol and the Star Roamer, if you remember those kits. And one of those was one of my first kits I ever made. And so the Ozark Patrol is based on that, but it uses an interesting construction technique. You actually solder the parts to pads on the back of the front panel. And what that does is, for a beginning kit builder, if you put a part on wrong on a regular circuit board, it's difficult for a first-time builder to desolder that part safely. On this board, all you do is you take the soldering iron, tuck it under that leg of the part, heat it up slightly, and lift it off. And you leave the blob of solder there, and so you can move the part where it belongs, and you just heat that up, and boom, it's right back in place. It has a big speaker. It's about 2 or 3 inches across, so it has pretty good volume to it. And I've used it to actually sit and work on the bench and listen to your show.
Goodness. Did it sound good? Or,
Oh, yeah. In fact, a regenerative receiver, of course, doesn't have the filtering that other receivers have. So it actually has a lot higher fidelity when you listen to shortwave broadcasts. The Bayou Jumper takes a regenerative receiver circuit and adds a CW transmitter, a 5-watt one, and it's designed to resemble the World War II Paraset. But instead of vacuum tubes, of course, it is solid state. And the key is built into it. It still uses the chicken head style switch to turn it on and to receive and transmit. And I didn't even call CQ. I answered a guy calling CQ on 40 meters with the thing, and he was in Oregon, and we had a 30-minute rag chew on CW, which was really amazing for this 5-watt radio, and that's just into a dipole.
Why don't you tell folks again where they can find these things as we're talking now? It's because we got folks that have just tuned in. They're going, "Who is this guy?" So we're talking to Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, the kit man, and we have Don Wilbanks on with us here, who is actually tonight is Don's night on WTWWAE5DW. So, yeah, talk a little bit about where they can find these things and maybe give a little bit about the price range, too. I'm not telling you how to be the kit guy. I'm just making a suggestion.
Yeah, it comes from the 4-State QRP group, which is 4SQRP.com, 4SQRP.com. To give you an idea, the Ozark Patrol costs $50 to have it shipped to you. The Bayou Jumper, you have to buy the wooden case, and the wooden case is a particular part number from Hobby Lobby to put it in, but it fits perfectly in there. In fact, it comes with the modification blocks that you glue into it to make the board fit exactly right.
That's a great looking radio too. Once you get it all in that wooden case, I'm looking at it now. It's just,
and in fact,
this is a great website. This 4-State QRP group is a great website.
Yeah, these things sell for $86.80, and sounds a little expensive, but they have a newer version that's out now. Instead of that white board, it's a green board. And so they've even improved on it since it came out only this spring. So sometimes it pays to wait, and it's pretty amazing. It only draws 20 milliamps out of your battery when you're receiving, because regenerative receivers are very, very efficient. It's going to draw a lot more when you transmit, but it puts out what we like to call a QRP full gallon, which is 5 watts. And this is another kit that was at least partly designed by NM0S. And like I said, David is a design engineer for Rockwell Collins. The other part was done by N5IB, and in a cooperative venture, they put this kit together for the 4-State QRP group. It is in stock and able to be to be shipped.
I guess for QRP, that would be a full pint, wouldn't it?
Yeah. They have another kit, and it's called the Cricket. And when you think of a CW transceiver, that would be suitable for a very first-time kit builder. And we did this kit at OzarkCon this year, and most of the builders were done in well under an hour, and it comes with the key.
Yeah, the parts count is incredibly low. And what's very cool is the inductors are actually the traces on the board.
Yeah, it's spiral wound inductors. So right. You don't have to wind any toroids or anything. The parts count is very, very small, and it's a great first-time builder. If you're a novice or a tech, it's okay because you're allowed CW privileges. So any ham licensee can use this kit. And so that's why they did this. And they supply it with the color burst crystal because obviously you don't hear noises on that frequency anymore with the new digital TVs. And so $35.79 is what's supplied. Now, obviously, the selectivity of the receiver is going to be a little wider. And so you can hear the ARRL CW beacon code practice, which is about a kilohertz away, and it comes through quite well on it. In fact, I hooked it up to my 40-meter wire antenna during OzarkCon, and it was not super strong, but I could hear the ARL practice very solid. So I thought, okay, I'm going to unhook the antenna and hook it up to my Elecraft K2, which is an SDR receiver. And I'm looking, and that S meter is not moving over S1. So it can hear just about anything. The sensitivity of the receiver is incredible. Like I said, all you have to do is stick the 9-volt battery on it, plug a headset in, plug the key, not even plug a key in because it has the key, and plug an antenna into it, and away you go. It is fixed frequency, but a lot of guys hang out on that frequency that play with QRP because the 3579 crystals are quite popular. And I have a suggestion, and what I do is I take two little pins from a machine pin socket strip, and I solder them onto the board where you're going to have the crystal instead of soldering the crystal to the board. And that lets me use other crystals within the 80-meter CW band.
Something else cool about the 4-State QRP group, if you're a beginning kit builder and you get in trouble, they have people who will offer kit building services who either will build it for you or will help you, who are just like an email or a phone call away, who will give you some hints and tips if you get stuck, which is very, very cool. This 4-State QRP group, it would be worth your while, I think, if you're at all interested in this, to just go ahead and join the group.
Yeah, it costs nothing, very, very actually. Cool. Costs nothing to actually join the 4-State QRP group. And they have a Facebook group as well as an online mail list, an email list that you can get on. We used to call those a listserv.
Yeah.
And
looks like they have a Yahoo group too, an email email reflector. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the new things that they've come out with that I haven't gotten yet is the new enclosure kits. And these are designed by A0ZZ, who made the receiver that we talked about earlier. And this is enclosures that are made out of PC board material.
Right.
And so you can drill the front panel and so forth separately and put everything together. And then you put the case together by using solder on little pads to hold the corners together. And so now you end up with a very strong case that's made out of PC board material that's double-sided. So you have a double shielded case.
Now, you know, I was noticing on this Cricket transmitter thing here, it says chirps not included. Most Crickets chirp, this one doesn't. Okay. Did you ever have a CW transmitter chirp on you? Joe, have you ever had
Yes, yeah. Yes, an ICO 720.
Oh, really? Yes. I wanted. Well, I had a 753 that drifted, but I've made a few transmitters that chirped, and some of them I couldn't get the chirp out.
Yeah, those were called the 7Drifty 3.
There you go. So now you were talking about this Cricket. I'm moving along at a slower pace than you are. But what was the first? The very first kit that you were talking about from the 4-State QRP group. I know there's a lot of folks out there that that follow as slow as I do. So
that was the ZZRX 40 receiver.
Okay.
And the interesting thing about that one, like I said, it was featured in QST and CQ. It has an option. The VFO can either cover the whole band or a small part of the band. It can be set up as a VXO or hooked up to an external VXO or VFO or a DDS. And a lot of guys are using the Arduino Nanos and making their own little DDS synthesizer and using that to control the receive frequency on those.
Well, there's, so there's a link here to Freakmite. Is that a another?
What that is, that's another kit. That's a kit made by somebody else that the Four State QRP group has kind of taken over. And what that does is the Freakmite, you hook to take a sample of your oscillator, and then you can program it for what the offset is. Like if the local oscillator is so many kilohertz away from where you're really receiving and so forth. And then it puts out audio as CW, and you inject that into the audio amplifier stage. And so you will hear, if you push a button, you'll be able to hear Morse code telling you what frequency you're on, which is really cool for these simple kits.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was something like a VFO or something like that. I didn't know what it was. On this particular one here, on this ZZRX40, is there a picture of this thing somewhere, or is it kind of like you build it and then create your own enclosure?
No, actually it uses the PC boards as the enclosure. So once again, the boards are already pre-drilled, pre-labeled and everything. All you do is you break it apart and put it together.
I found the pictures. They're bright red. That's that's very cool looking. That's very cool looking. So are you going to get one of these, Don?
I might. I'm thinking about it. There's a bunch of stuff in there that I would like to have.
It receives the shortwave broadcast stations quite well that are just above the 40-meter band. But keep in mind that it does have a BFO, so you have to zero beat them.
Well, see, Don, you want something that will talk too. You don't want to just listen. You know, you're like I am. You know, we work in radio, so
you know, right.
We got to talk. What do you think about that, Joe? Didn't you work in radio for a while, or didn't you do something? Seemed like I had a conversation with you like that, but that could have been something I dreamt. You know, so I don't know.
No, actually, my college work was broadcast journalism. And so I was trained in broadcast production, but never worked in the industry. I got into the IT business, but my college training was doing exactly what we're doing here tonight.
Well, that's interesting. So you see, Don, he moved on to a legitimate job. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like he's actually doing
well, so. What this just proves, Ted, is that neither you nor I are fit to get a real job.
Yeah, but I don't know. Would we want one? You know?
No.
So now,
you know, when you only have plan A and not a plan B, you got to make plan A work. So.
Okay, so I'm reviewing again. I'm dragging my feet. So the Bayou Jumper is a transceiver. Now,
yes.
Is this the one that is rockbound to one frequency?
It is crystal controlled. You can put any 40-meter CW band crystal in it, and it will work fine. The receiver is variable. You can tune up and down the whole band, at least a good hunk of the band, with the VFO on the receiver on that one. But it also has a variable attenuator, so you don't get swamped when, like, a contest is going on and so forth. And it's kind of fun, actually, to work a few people during a contest on it.
Well, you know, I was looking at this, and I moved on down the road here to the Ozark Patrol, and it does look, to me, it's reminiscent of, oh, I don't know, the Star Roamer, Ocean Hopper, vintage. But this looks like it's more substantial than those, I think. At least it's prettier if you buy the, yes, you got to get the case or whatever it is that it's all mounted on.
Well, it comes with the wood board that it bolts to. and the battery thing and everything. It comes with everything but the batteries. And I think it runs on 6 AA batteries. But it has those nice big knobs and so forth, and works quite well. I hooked it up to my regular antennas outside, and it's just amazing what you hear with it. And like I said, your station is always pretty strong here in the Midwest, and the Ozark Patrol hears it quite well. And
there's a picture of the Ocean Hopper on that page. I was looking at it. It was kind of funny. I don't know what they're saying about it, but there's a picture of an Ocean Hopper. That's a night, the old night ocean, and a picture of an old. Well, there's the plug-in coils. Looks like a Clevite brush headset there, to go with it. That's cool. But then I was just looking. The price on the Ocean Hopper used to be $15.95. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. It really is. Just looking at this stuff, I think this is really, these guys, I'm with Don. I think that it'd be nice to just join the group and follow along, you know, because.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're constantly making new kits. And I always tell people, if a kit is on their website and marked as available and you even have a hint that you want it, order it now, because they don't supply these kits forever. There's a lot of kits that have gone away, not because they weren't good kits, but because the parts may have been kind of a one-shot surplus buy or things like that, where they could only produce so many kits. And all the kits are assembled together in bags by volunteers for the 4-State QRP group. So we have our kitting team for each kit.
You know, that's a problem. What I mean is, and that's a problem everyone has today that is selling something electronic, because you design something and you plan on it being here, and in a year can go by, even 6 months can go by, and all of a sudden the company you're getting the bulk of your stuff or a good portion of your stuff or something critical that you really need, they just decide, hey, we ain't making this no more. You know, so now you either have to redesign what you're doing or you just have to discard what you've done. So it makes perfect sense if you see something like one of these kids, order it right now, snatch it up, and because that happens, and it happens to the big electronic folks.
I'm going to give you a hint, because you know you're of course into broadcast type stuff. There is a kit out there that makes a pocket AM radio, and you say, well, you know, is that yesterday's? This is yesterday's. This is very interesting. It's called a Texun, TECSUN, 2P3. 2P as in Papa, 3. And so if you even just type in on Google the 2P3 kit, you'll see links to where you can buy this thing. And what it is it's an AM broadcast receiver. But if you look at it, it's a Chinese kit. And it reproduces a 1960s vintage pocket transistor radio. The only difference from the original design is that they use an IC for the audio amplifier output. Otherwise, it is pretty much the authentic circuit that you used back then. In fact, you have to adjust the transformers and the local oscillators and so forth. The amazing thing about this thing is it has good sound to it and extremely good sensitivity and selectivity. I was just really, really impressed with it sitting in my basement and listening to AM broadcast stations from all over the Midwest that I normally would hear with a big radio hooked to the outside antenna. But if you look at the sensitivity of that receiver and you look at the size of the loop stick antenna that it comes with, it's not a little bar and it's not compressed or anything. That is a full size traditional ferrite loop stick. And it's amazing what you hear with this. And it has great audio. And it's also a good fun kit to do. But you might want to have somebody help you with it, because the instructions are a little confusing as they are translated from Chinese to English. It is written in English, but some of the things don't quite make sense. So somebody with just a little experience would make the build a little easier. But the end product is an absolutely high-quality pocket AM radio.
I was going to say, the Texon Radio Company is located in Beijing, and they published, this has been back a couple of years ago, three, 4 years ago, maybe further, because my time sense is bad, but they published that they manufacture 30,000 shortwave radios per day. I say shortwave, but multiband. 30,000 a day. So I picked up the phone and called them and talked to one of their public relations people. Excuse me. Anyways, and I said, is that a misprint? And the guy says, no. He said, it's not a misprint. So he began to talk about the fact that not everybody in China has government power, and that these radios just go everywhere under the sun. Some of, you know, they're all battery powered, and he said, you may go into, well, anyways, he asked me, do you have any idea how many people are in China? I said, well, there's a lot of people in China, you know, but they go all over the world. They go into Africa. So the company that makes this, this Texon, is a big manufacturer, because they make all of the Grundigs. They make all of the, I'm trying to think of the other brand name. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Eaton.
Yeah, they make Eaton. That's right. Hey, there you go. They're, you know. There's another brand that I'm familiar with that they make, and they do a lot of private labeling. So you'll see something like, Seacrane Skywave is a good example. And Texon makes the identical radio with the Texon name on it, slightly different, just, you know, something in a different place. So, but they're so that if they're the quality of what they have, and everything I've ever had that's been Texon, I've got a Grundig, what is the thing? Satellite 800 or something like that. Great shortwave radio. If the same company, then the quality would be good. But I'll tell you what's fun to do with those things, those little transistors like that. You get you some jeweler's screwdrivers, and you go in there and mess around, and you can get the thing on shortwave. You get a little pocket shortwave radio. But no, that's very, very cool. That is very cool. So where do you get, if you were to order one, where do you get it from, Joe?
That particular kit, I think I ordered it from Amazon is where I got that one. And the reason I did that one and wrote about it was because a lot of people were asking me about broadcast receiver kits and if they still made such things. And when I found this one, and I talked to somebody at one of the ham fests that had put one of these together. He says, oh, Joe, you cannot believe how good that radio is. And it's great to have around, especially on football days here in Nebraska and so forth, to hear the game. But when I put it together, like I said, I was very pleasantly surprised once I got it lined up with the quality of the receiver and the audio quality coming out of that darn little speaker, and just a high quality radio all in all. And the best part about it is you got to build it.
That's amazing. I'll tell you what else I found, and I'll just pass this along. I won't remember the brand name. On eBay, I've noticed there are shortwave radios for sale. It seems like the brand name is TIVIDO, I think that's what it is. Anyhow, they're $18 with a slot for an SD card to record and play back. And I was very skeptical, so I ordered, you know, a few of those. And I've put it right up against the Texon, not the Texon, the I guess it probably is a Texon. I put it right up against the Seacrane Skywave, and this radio is a little bit smaller. Okay. But I mean, it's neck to neck. Now Holly got one, and, this one did not have the SD card in it, but it looks like the same radio. And I've been told it's all the same chipset. What's the name of that one that you got?
It's the Happy Radio.
The Happy radio.
Now, does it say like SRW 710S on it?
I don't know. We haven't looked that close.
I can go get it.
Yeah. Because
I have one. I have one that's put out by Kaimeda, which is K-A-I-M-E-D-A. And it has the SD card that lets you record the programming. It has AM, FM, and shortwave, and it hears FM, stereo, and so forth. And this one has a cell phone battery in it instead of double A's or triple A's. And you charge it with a cell phone charger.
That's one of the kinds we got. We got that one and that other one, and I think they're made by the same company or somebody. You'll see all these people selling them on eBay, and it'll say 500 sold, 600 sold. So they're going like crazy. And we're getting emails from listeners that have bought these things, and they're tuning around, and they catch a song, and they hear us announce, well, if you would like to make a request, you know, send us an email. They email. But what I found out by corresponding with some of those folks, they've bought these radios. They have no idea they're shortwave. They just think they're listening to radio. But they're going out by the masses. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, they're very popular radios. As you can see, I'm almost obsessed with that kind of radio, too. My favorite portable is the Skywave for traveling. That's a really, really good one to take with you.
Well, they're like $89, but now I've neck-to-neck tested these other radios that are like $18, and the one that Holly got... The one that Holly got, the Happy, I think it was $12.95, free shipping, okay? And and side by side, I mean, I'll go up and down the shortwave dial and compare, like, weak shortwave stations and strong stations and all that. I can't see any difference between the Skywave and these $18 radios. So I'm just thinking, if someone's looking for a radio, you might want to try one of these things. And they're a little bit smaller than the Skywave. They're just a little thinner, you know? And I don't know, what's your, have you done any testing on them to see how you think they stack up?
It does pretty comparable. I still like the Skywave better, especially because the Skywave has the long wave and the aircraft band, which that's my go-to when I see flight problems at an airport. I listen to see if there's any issues with inbounds, with weather, and so forth. And so having that capability helps as well. But this one that I have, like I said, is an SRW710S, and it works quite well. But like I said, you charge it with a cell phone charger, and I found that kind of unique.
Yeah, no, there is one that I saw that is that's got the aircraft band on it, and it's also got long wave that you're talking about. And it's one of those types, and it's a little bit more. I think they're wanting like $23 or $25 for it or something like that. But it's got the extra stuff on it, which I never use anyways, but I always use just shortwave. And but it kind of blew me away. I can't figure out how they make these things. Like this Happy that she's got was like $12. And free shipping. I mean, how do they do that? Yeah, what can you do for $12? It's just, you know, unthinkable. But I'm glad that I am certainly happy that there is, not no pun intended toward a radio, but that these things are going out and there's massive amounts of them being sold and a lot of brand new shortwave listeners coming on board. Also, that one I was telling you about, that's $23 or $24 or something like that, it's also got a beat frequency oscillator on it, so you can listen to sideband and code and whatnot. Who would think for under $25?
Is that a Kaito?
I don't remember. I just remember seeing. I remember seeing that. I almost ordered one. I thought I'm going to go ahead and get one of these, but for some reason I got distracted. You know, if there's something shiny going on, Don and I both have this problem. You know,
squirrel.
Yeah. So. Anyhow, but I thought it was cool. I thought that was really cool.
Now, Joe, what was the company that was making those kits that we saw at Huntsville the last few years? They weren't at Huntsville this year. Who was back off in the corner at the Huntsville Ham Fest?
Okay, that is Nightfire Electronics.
Nightfire, that's right. Yeah,
and they are at vakits.com, vakits.com. And they have a lot of neat little beginner's kits that are under $15. They have flashing lights, and they have a crystal oscillator tester, and they have some of the simple Pixie CW transceiver kits, and the vast majority of their kits are $15 or under.
They've got something here that says it's solderless as well, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, they are actually in Ocala, Florida.
Yeah.
And I drove right by Ocala and only a couple months ago when I drove to Florida, and I wish I would have stopped there and took a look at his setup there. But they make a lot of audio amps, things like that, that you could use, like with that code oscillator kit I was talking about earlier. You could plug the audio output into that, and it'll drive a speaker. He has a lot of stuff that would be really useful to have. Things
didn't they have
power supplies and things like that.
Test equipment too. Didn't they have like a little oscilloscope that had an LCD display on it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
They had one of the oscilloscope kits, the DSO-138 kit, which had the surface mount already done. So all you have to do is the through hole parts. And I recommend those. Those are really good. But they have a lot of switching power supplies and variable regulated power supplies. So you can get a power supply for about any kind of small project you're working on. They have relay kits. They have big number display kits. So you can make like a scoreboard or something for a basketball situation, things like that. A lot of Arduino stuff. He has
Bluetooth stuff on here too, which is very cool.
I was looking at this here. They've got a Code Practice oscillator, two of them. It looks like on here, and some other ham stuff. They got a crystal tester. Now, I'll tell you, you have no idea what a stew you can be in trying to build something or put something together, and you don't know that your crystal's bad. You know, that's only $12. It'd be worth to have that around.
Now,
the
what
shack.
It does is it just puts a light on if the crystal is oscillating. It doesn't tell you what frequency it's on, but it turns a light on. Now, I'm going to throw another web page at you, and it's going to have a kit that will not only turn a light on when there's a crystal there, it's going to tell you digitally what frequency that crystal is oscillating on. And that is done by Rex, and that would be at qrpme.com. And now this site is where the Tunitin kits are. The Tunitin is the derivative of the old original Tunitin, which was put out by Doug DeMaw from ARL back in 1976. And so the basic design is still there, but updated, and it's still built into a tuna can. In fact, that
webpage Rex, is what? Oh, give that webpage again.
QRPME, Mike Echo, QRPME.com, and gets the ME from the fact that it's in the state of Maine. And if I can look up here, I will see if I can find the kit. If you look at the FDIM 2017 Build-A-Thon kit, that's the one. And you can look down and you can look at the directions and stuff for it. We not only built the kit, but we also ground crystals that were not quite in the band and moved them into the ham band and tested them with this.
Now, you moved them into the ham band from where now?
Like from 6,900 or so forth into the lower part of 40 meters by grinding them on a real fine grit and polishing them and cleaning them and testing them.
Oh, I remember doing that to a broadcast transmitter once, and I was close. I was close, but I didn't get it quite on. And of course,
I know you have to be 20 hertz.
And that thing had a you know, the other stations that were way out in the distance, that the ones that were on the air on the same frequency, they would beat up against it. You could hear that. That flip, 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 flip. It was way down there, but it we just didn't quite get it right the first time.
This kit actually has an LCD display that tells you what frequency the crystal is on.
Now this whole thing, these are the guys, and I remember seeing them, the kits in the tuna cans.
Right. If anybody is going to NearFest this weekend, which is the New England Amateur Radio Fest in Deerfield, New Hampshire, I went to that last year. If anybody is going to that this coming weekend, Rex is usually there. Looks like an old ambulance that he operates out of in the flea market, and he will be selling his kits. They are in tuna cans. Not only do they make a good case for the kit, but that's what the parts are sent to you in. He actually has a tuna canning machine, and he puts the parts in a bag inside the tin and seals the can. So you have to zip top the lid off to get in and get the parts and then build your kit.
I remember a long time ago, and I don't know what it was, but it was in QST, and it was called the Tuna 2. And I don't know if that was a 2 meter thing or if it meant something else. I just remember
that is the 40 meter CW transmitter, and it puts out about half watt or so. And they have a 40th anniversary of the TT2 out there, and it's just a more improved version of it, but it's the same basic circuit. Just a little more refined than what it was in 1976. Because the original one in 1976 required you to buy an RF choke at Radio Shack and then take so many turns off of the choke. Well, obviously you can't get that anymore. So he uses pre-molded chokes. But this one goes together quite easily. It has a little toggle switch to transmit-receive. And you can run it on anywhere from 9 to 12 volts and plug your key into it. And it has an output for your receiver, so you can have any kind of receiver hooked to that. And when you flip the switch, it cuts the antenna over to the transmitter.
Well, you know, it's amazing because, if you're a member of the ARRL, if you are a member, and that's a deal, I'll tell you, you get all these QST magazines, all the past issues going way on back. And you can go back there and look up Tuna 2, and that'll pop up, and it'll tell you which one it's in, and you can see the diagram. But much, much easier ordering from these guys if you're interested in building one of these things.
Yeah, and it works quite well, and I've had a lot of fun with these. In fact, we did this one in Houston this last year at the Hamfest there.
Well, there is something a little fishy about this, but
I get it.
Nonetheless, there's one here that says sudden storm.
Okay.
I love the names that he's given these things. They're very cool names that he's given all these tuna tin kits.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of them have to do with where he is in Maine. In fact, he has a sticker that goes on the outside, and one of them says, "From the rock-bound coast of Maine." And the sudden storm is actually a simple direct conversion receiver for 40 meters.
So that would, now let me say this.
You could use it with the tuna tin, yes.
But it does have like a BFO, so you can, can hear. Okay, I didn't know. These guys, both of my sons have got general tickets. Holly's got a general ticket, and I was talking in the room with them here back, I don't know, maybe a year ago, and I mentioned a BFO, and they said, a what? I said, a beat frequency oscillator, And they thought it was some sort of a thing, an abusive thing like a wolf hung, because it's a beat frequency oscillator. I said, they didn't know what it was. So I know.
By the way, the ever popular rock mic kits that were put out by another gentleman earlier are now being put out by Rex. And so those are an interesting kit. They use two crystals on the same frequency. One is used as a receive filter, and the other is used as the oscillator. It's a very fascinating kit. And it was popularized many years ago in QST and CQ. And it is still available through Rex if you look for the RockMite 2 kits.
Boy, I'll tell you what. Folks tuning in here tonight, Don, what do you think? They're really getting, if they're interested in kits, even if you're not, this is just really interesting. I mean, this is just, really, okay. Really.
Well, now, that's what you get with Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. The man is a wealth of information, and all of it's good.
Well, let me tell you about a soldering iron. okay? And I can't remember the model number on this thing. I'm going to have to look and see if I can find it. Hopefully you're not hearing me typing too much, especially with this new mic. Hopefully you didn't hear me type.
No.
It doesn't matter because, see, this is an informal radio show. There are no rules. There's no format. Okay, we don't have the thing divided into segments. It was one segment today, and that's Joe Eisenberg. So
we make it up as we go along.
I was here. I see one here that's called the Lobster Con Main Bugs 2 Kit. I don't know what that is, but
I can't remember what that is either. Lobster Con is a QRP ham fest that Rex organizes every year. That's held at a campgrounds in Maine. And they do a group kit build. Sometimes one of the guys flies a kite with a HF antenna on it. The big feature of it, like here in Nebraska, we have a ham radio steak fry. Well, there it's a lobster thing. And let's see if I can find this.
You could spend a lot of time on this website, but it's helpful to have you along because as soon as I click on something, you immediately know what it is. So, except you don't know what this main bugs is. I don't know. I'm looking at it.
I'm trying to remember. I have not built it. There's a kit here, and it's distributed by a company right here in Lincoln, Nebraska. And when I was looking at these things, somebody from Ohio told me, I get stuff shipped to me from Lincoln, Nebraska. Isn't that where you're from? And I said, yes, but I'd never heard of this company. So he sent them an email and they got a hold of me and gave me a tour of their plant that they have for distributing this stuff. It is designed here, but made overseas and then shipped here to Nebraska and then distributed through their Amazon store and their eBay store. And the company is called Xtronic USA, Xtronic USA. And they make a really good low-cost line of soldering irons and soldering stations. And the one I'm going to talk about is the 3020. And this particular one looks just like the Weller that most of the people buy, that orange one that's got the knob on the front to vary the temperature. The big difference is this one is digital temperature control with sleep mode. It'll do Fahrenheit, Celsius. It's got two different things to clean your soldering tip built into this thing and a solder roll holder to keep your solder from rolling off the table, all attached to the base. And these things sell for under $50. It is thermostatically controlled to plus or minus 2 degrees Celsius, which is the standard for electronics manufacturing. And I can't remember what they get for it online. I think it's like $49 for this one. And it's going to be, it had been in my column a little over a year ago, and it's going to get mentioned again in my December column because it's a great holiday gift idea. You get a soldering station under $50 that is full digital temperature control.
Now, where is this website? I was looking at Xtronics, and
no, Xtronicusa, Xtronicusa.com.
Okay.
And these are distributed from a plant that's clear on the west side of Lincoln, Nebraska, and but like I said, you can order it directly from them. But a lot of times if you order it through Amazon or their eBay store, they have specials on it that don't show up on their own webpage. And they told me to let people know that you can order them on Amazon. And if you got Amazon Prime, you can get it in 2 days. And it's really good. In fact, that went with me to the last kit build I did in Peoria. And I let somebody else use that. And they were really, really impressed with it. The difference between just a variable heat and a thermostatically controlled one is night and day. Because if you got a variable one, you got to turn it up and down. This one here, you can set it at the temperature you want. The only time that you'd turn it up would be if you're using lead-free solder, or if you're going to use some solder wick or be desoldering something. Otherwise, you pretty much leave it where it sits, like around 620 degrees or so. And it keeps it at an exact temperature. So when you put the soldering tip down on that connection and you add the fact that you're heating up the component and the board pad and melting the solder that joins together to make that connection, it's going to deliver more heat to that tip. And so that makes a much better connection. Otherwise, if your tip cools down, you might end up with a cold solder joint.
Well, you know, we've used these Hakkos for a long time because they were, to me, they seem to perform better than the Wellers and other ones that we had fooled around with. But I was looking at this. This one looks really cool. I'm seeing one here for $39.80, and it just says Extronic 3000 series model standalone soldering station. And there's a roll of solder right by it. You know, it actually accommodates a roll of solder, which is kind of cool. Because every time we get set up, we're always looking for solder. It's like, what happened to the solder? You know, stole the solder.
Yeah, this one, the solder will stay there. I recommend the 3020 because it has a digital display, so you can get a more precise read on your temperature.
Well, that looks cool. For $50, though, that's quite the deal.
That's pretty amazing. And you're talking about the Hakko soldering irons. The tips are interchangeable with one of the series of Hakko soldering irons.
Really? Yeah, well, you know, the only reason why we wound up with them was we just needed a soldering station that would maintain a temperature, you know, that was thermostatically controlled and all that. But the cheapest Hakko is, what is it, Holly? We priced them before. I'm trying to think. They're at least
$120.
$120 or something along that
line. Yeah. And this one's $50. They also have hot tweezer rework stations to do surface mount. They have hot air rework stations. They have multifunction ones that will actually heat the board for you and things like that with multiple soldering irons. So you can have one at one temperature, one at the other, or one for leaded solder, one for no lead solder, which requires a higher heat. So you can have multiple soldering irons on these things that they sell. They even have one that has a bench power supply built into the solder station.
Well, that's amazing. It really is. I have to look through their stuff. I looked interesting to see what kind of desoldering things they have going on, because we're always in the middle of that, trying to get a component off a board. What about you, Don? You ever have to desolder something?
Yeah, not in a while, though. The last soldering I did was actually last night when I put a quarter-inch TRS plug and an XLR connector on to make the cable for my little audio processor here to jumper between the processor and the board here. And I did it all in the first shot. I didn't have to go through and unsolder anything, which was really good. So, but that's a great sounding little solder station. That sounds like well worth the money. And it's amazing the stuff that you can get now that rivals the stuff that is, you know, so much more expensive. And it's basically almost exactly the same for just a fraction of what you would, the quote unquote good stuff costs.
Well, is that like I'm looking at this thing and I can't really tell from the picture, but is that okay? So the little coil deal there is where you can,
that's where you put your iron.
And then it's got a little sponge at the bottom, so you can wet the sponge down and you've got a way to clean the tip. And then it's got a place to hold the roll of solder. That's just too intelligent.
I'll tell you even more. If you look right below the coil, there's a thing you can pop the lid off of that can, and it has the brass coil in there that you can also use to clean the tip. Mm-hmm. And if you push farther into that, it has a flux-like tip cleaner substance there that when you push it in there, it will clean your tip.
Wow.
So, you know, when you're talking that for a $49 soldering station that keeps plus or minus 2 degrees Celsius, that's pretty darn amazing.
Well, you can't beat that. This is important, though, because you know, Joe, that when people sit down to build a kit, if they've got a junk soldering iron, it's not going to be an enjoyable kit build.
Exactly. And something like this is affordable, and it's sophisticated enough that, that I've used it to build several kits. And I have multiple soldering stations. I have a Weller. I have a another one. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I won it as a prize in Huntsville.
At the Hayco? And,
no, it's not a Hayco.
Is it maybe Unger? There was another big company.
No, it was something else, and it's called a Loner, and but I can't remember who makes it. And the announcer at Huntsville said, and the prize of this professional soldering station goes to the one person in this room that would probably use it the most, and that was me. And that has been my main soldering station. All I've done is replace the tips about once a year. I always pick up a new tip at Dayton. And it's been really good. It's an Edson, E-D-S-Y-N, Edson. And it's an Edson Loner, L-O-N-E-R. And I don't know if they still make that model or if they have an updated one. I'm guessing they have an updated one. But it also keeps the temperature very level, but it is not a digital readout. It is analog. But it gets me close enough. But what's amazing about it is that it's got this cup at the top that you put your soldering in to hold it. And that cup has this flame-proof paper cone that's in there. And so the any solder or flux that drips off your tip gets caught in there instead of falling on your table, and it attenuates the smoke, but it also keeps you from getting burned if you were to touch that metal coil or something or get your hands too close. This thing is well insulated, so nothing's going to catch on fire.
Well, that's cool. Now let me ask you a question, because we're getting close to the point, not exactly close to the point of running out of time. But I wanted to ask you, where are you? Where can folks find you next? Where's the next? Where are you headed? What direction are you going in?
Well, it's interesting because I don't have any speaking engagements set up now till the end of the year. I will be attending a couple of ham fests in the Kansas City metro area. One's called the Southside Ham Fest, and the other one is at the Shriners Temple in Kansas City called the Raytown Ham Fest. So I will be attending those, and that's pretty much the end of my travel season for this year. And then we're going to start up again January or February. We'll figure out where we're going, and I'll be putting out a list of where I'm going to be. I do know I'll probably obviously be at Ozark Con in April, and I will be also in April at the Claremore Ham Fest, which is the Green Country Ham Fest in Oklahoma.
That's a good one.
It is. It's really good. About 1,500 people attend it. It's just huge, and it's a wonderful spring break. There's one in March right here in Lincoln, Nebraska that I'll be at as well. So the travel schedule is still kind of firming up for next year, and then we'll be able to give you a better list.
Well, but, are you available for clubs and organizations that say, hey, we want to bring him in as our part of our ham fest and classes and whatnot? And
yeah, in fact, during the wintertime, I've done a lot of clubs before. So if your club wants to bring me in during the wintertime, that's fine. In fact, although I do prefer warmer climates in January, but I'll go anywhere. So I've done Fargo in January before. So
did you hear that, Holly?
Oh, geez.
But
yeah, Holly's from North Dakota. So when you said Fargo in January, that's cold.
I know what that's like.
Yep. But you know, I'm in Nebraska, so cold in the winter, hot in the summer, and tornadoes in between. So I, you know, if anybody has a club that wants either a seminar or a group kit build experience or both, they can get a hold of me, and it's very easy. My email address is simply Joe, J-O-E, at K0NEB.com. Joe at K0NEB.com. Yes, I have my own domain.
You know, I was going to say, though, have you ever done any of this? Have you ever visited any clubs by means of Skype?
Yes, I have. I've done several. I've done the Collins Club in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, by Skype recently, about a year ago. And I was going to do one. I was set to do Skype to one in Overland Park. No, it was Olathe, Kansas, this last January. And I told him, I said, you know, if the weather is good, I might even drive down because it's only three and a half hours from here. And it turned out to be one of those 50, 60 degree January thaw days. And so I actually drove down there. They were expecting me on Skype, and here I walk in the door.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, I was just thinking about that because there's a lot of clubs that may be a long ways away from you, and then, you know, trying to book a time to go and all that would be complicated, where you, if they had a big screen TV and you could use Skype, you could, you know, you could be right there with them. I think that would be,
yep.
Especially with what you do with the kits and everything, you know, because I know
it's better to be hands-on. If we're actually building one, I like to be there to show them little tricks and techniques to handle the different components.
Well, that makes sense, but that's the luxury of being able to have you in person, you know.
and the good news is if somebody in your club works for an airline or something, that helps too.
There you go. You get a little help on the travel side of things. Well, sir, we're about out of time here, and I really, really appreciate you coming on. Now, here's the thing. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that derailed your train of thought? You didn't get to talk about it.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the Hamfest in Michigan, and it was the first time for this. They decided to hold the Great Lakes Division ARL convention. They were actually approached by NASCAR looking for events that could be held at their facilities off season. And they said, hey, you know, we have conventions like the one in Xenia that are on a facility that's smaller than this, in terms of the ability to handle cars on site and so forth. So this was the first try at it. There was a little over 1,000 attendees, which would put it about the same size as the Peoria Ham Fest. There weren't as many vendors the first time because a lot of the vendors were very cautious, saying, well, this is a new Ham Fest. We don't know how many people will be there, but there was well over 1,000 there. They had a special event station on the air, all modes, including FT8. And they had a banquet on Saturday night, and the Hamfest was open again on Sunday. And they used the rooms like they would use for the press conferences for the race car drivers, very nice rooms for the seminars, and an absolute first-class facility for a Hamfest. And a few guys were tempted to even drive a lap around the track.
Did you do that?
No, I didn't get to, but I took a picture of a minivan going by the finish line.
You know, one thing I want to mention here, and Holly just reminded me of this, or to pass by here, that you're an award-winning photographer. And, you know, while we're talking, why don't you mention a little bit about that, talk about your you call it a profession, if it's a hobby, but you've won awards for it. So tell
us have done over the years, I usually take pretty good quality photos. I'm always the guy in the family who got handed the 8mm movie camera and later camcorders and cameras to take all the group shots because I always did it right and they always came out framed right and so forth. And I was on a family trip to Las Vegas in 2001 and I took a picture of the Sphinx and the Luxor behind it from the train platform where you have the shuttle train between the hotels. And it was with a 1.2 megapixel digital camera. And it was an exceptional photo. And I printed it with an inkjet printer. And I gave it to my mother, who was quite sick at the time. And she said, and I had framed it for her. She says, you got to print another one of those and enter it like in a county fair or state fair just to see how it does. And I said, well, you know, nobody's entered any digital photos into that before. And so I entered it. I actually entered two photos, and they both won blue ribbons against over 70 competitors in each of their categories.
Wow.
And so my mother made me promise before she passed away that I would enter photos that even if I only entered one in the fair, after that, and she passed away 2 months later. And to this day, I still enter the county fair when I can, but, I try every year to enter the state fair. This year I got one blue ribbon against about 60 competitors in that category. So, I still do it. I don't always get a blue ribbon, but I usually get at least one ribbon winner out of the entries.
So there you go, Don. We have an Ansel Adams here in our midst.
Oh no, I've been admiring his photography for years. In fact, I have one of his old cameras. So, and Tyler's been using it now in his duties with the Navy Junior ROTC and with the robotics team. He's actually shooting video with it, shooting green screen video with it, and doing the editing. So he's learning photography on that old camera. So,
well,
thank
Joe,
you
is
very
there
much,
is there some place that folks can go and see some of your work?
There's none online, really. Sometimes I post some stuff on Facebook, besides cell phone pictures, but I don't really post a lot of it online, at least the full resolution, because I don't want them to be used without permission. But 2 years ago, I had one of my photos used as an official football poster for the University of Nebraska football schedule. So
you have to publish low resolution and use a cat in the hat watermark across the whole
thing. Yeah, watermark them. Exactly. That's right.
Something like that. And by the way, I have a new hat, and this was posted, I think, on Facebook.
I saw
and,
that.
Okay. What was it, Holly?
It's the same as the original Dr. Seuss hat, but this one's a lot nicer. It's a lot easier to wear because I don't have to stuff it full of newspaper to make it stand up. It is slightly shorter. That'll help me get into the tents, but not enough shorter that you wouldn't know who I am. It was stitched very professionally by Ron and Amy Kritzman from Gold Medal Ideas, who does embroidery at Hamfest. And they did an incredible job. I actually gave them two different ones to do. So I have a spare. It's a slightly different style, but still the same Dr. Seuss hat. And so come Dayton this year, you will see me wearing a new hat.
Where did you see this, Holly?
I saw him posted on Facebook, and we get a bunch of our stuff from them at Gold Medal Ideas.
Oh, yeah, these guys are great.
Yeah, so I guess you tagged them, and I'm friends with both of you guys, so I saw it.
She's already seen the hat.
I saw it, too.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it was actually
been,
put together in Peoria, and I was able to get the hat because the local stores, one particular local store, which has probably the largest Halloween department everywhere, had the hats, and they had the really good Dr. Seuss hats, not the cheap ones. And so I took advantage of that to get one only a couple days before I drove to speak and do a kit build in Peoria, and met them there to I let them know in advance what I was doing. And he was very careful to get the right fonts and get it to look right. So you will see a very high-quality embroidery job done by the Kritzmans from Gold Medal Ideas when I come to Dayton next May.
Now, they're the ones that we, the shirts that we wear that have the big tubes
and
on.
And our jackets.
Yeah, it says,
On our t-shirts, we have a, like, it looks like a metal ceramic, like a 4CX 10,000 tube, you know, right on the right on the front of the shirt. And then they, I don't know what's on the jackets. It's all
just
green.
Just embroidered QSO radio show on the
you
back.
You know, we were in a crowd, we stick out like sore thumbs, you know, but they did a fantastic job for us. They really did. So, well, I thank you. If there's anything else you can think of for, you know,
I think that's it. Hats off to the group in Michigan who put on a wonderful ham fest, and I hope it grows rapidly in the future. It's got plenty of room to grow in a really wonderful facility. Just think of a ham fest at a racetrack with the flea market on Pitt Road.
That'd be cool.
Wow.
There you go. Don, anything in your department you wanted to...
I just have one thing to add. I've been invited to, speaking of Skype and ham radio meetings, the Peoria Area Amateur Radio Club has invited me to speak via Skype at their meeting, and that will be coming up Thursday night of this week. So I'm looking forward to seeing the folks from Peoria. So thanks
for
the invite.
Well, you have to tell them you're a good friend.
Of you? What will I get for that?
You know, I don't know, but add $5 and you might get a Starbucks.
Yeah. Something wonderful. I'm sure I will. I'll mention that I know you. So.
Drop his name, you know, just drop.
Well, sure.
Him.
Yeah.
Say I'm Joe Eisenberg. We're tight.
Right.
We're tight. We're buddies.
We're tight. That's right. We're bunkies.
Yes, we are.
Bunkies, yeah.
Well, listen, I want to say 73 to 70. I always say 73s because I prefer that. But I was going to say, I'm going to say 73s to you guys and everybody that's listening. And Joe, thank you so much for coming on board and keeping us company tonight. And Don, thank you for being here and hosting the show. We appreciate all the stuff. There's a guy here, folks, and, you know, I do want to say this. This is between both of these fellows. They really, really put a lot of effort into promoting and preserving our fraternity of ham radio. So if you ever see them, be sure and say thank you or send them an email or something, because they spend a lot of their personal time promoting this thing and making it a better place for all of us. So,
you're too nice.
73s, and you guys have a good evening.
73s.
See you tomorrow night on Ham Nation.
There you go.